Hey, John Chimkus joining us in the studio. We'll probably talk about something other than vultures and calves and dogs, because there is a target-rich environment, I would say, to my West Point graduate congressman. And guns are the target-rich environment today. When you hear the president talk about, we'll confiscate and then talk about due process. Well, confiscation is, in fact, a result of due process. Have we lost sight of what the Second Amendment means in the United States and what it's there for?
Well, when we have these crises and these challenges, it gives us the opportunity to just remind people, talk through it. You know, presidents aren't, they're not dictators. They can make claims. They can make promises. We've seen them use executive authority in both sides, but on something like this, you would have to have a legislative process, and that's where people like me and other folks go back to the history, go back to the Bill of Rights. Why was it there? What was the intent? The founding fathers were just breaking away from a big centralized monarchy.
Who wanted to take their guns,
and they said no, and that's enshrined in the Bill of Rights. So, and I've tried to be very careful, not quickly responding to tweets or comments of the president. I kind of let 10 days go by, so the smoke settles, and then you kind of figure out. Now you don't have the opportunity to do that, and actually. It's tough for me to do it because people always want me to ask, but I find it better to let time cool before we really figure out what he's saying and why he's saying it.
And same thing could be said from the result of Parkland, because my firm belief is that what you're looking at is a large group of people that are in a state of grief, in shock.
Should be. We would all be. I mean, it's. I still have an 18-year-old. I love him dearly. If you would, you lose one, and you know, there's always that saying, how difficult it is for parents to outlive their children.
Right.
Now this was an act of violence. I can't. It's tough.
Right. And I've had a friend of mine. You know, his car was stolen from him, and he was pulled out of the trunk while he was back there, and he was shot in East St. Louis with a .357 Magnum from a man who just was released from prison at Menard. So, you know, that's not the same as losing a son, but I get it. And I've had other friends that have died similarly. But, you know, when it comes to this, this emotional drive, we have in the state of Illinois a lot of gun laws, probably the most gun laws of any other state when you consider the FOID card, and we're the only state that has one. We have a lot of gun legislation. They're talking about it in Springfield. We're seeing it in Washington. And a lot of people and supporters of the National Rifle Association are I always remember this. I call this the Russian problem. The day the Russian Soviet Union fell apart, and the people who didn't realize change was upon them, Gorbachev, he didn't realize that things had changed and it cost him his job. Is that what we're seeing now here in America? Things have changed dramatically, and you've got to be sensitive to how the wind is blowing, while at the same time honoring a number two that keeps number one. It's not about deer hunting. It's about a possible tyrannical government confiscating your guns and owning you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, which again, I would. We're in an emotional center of time, and we should allow time to calm, and then let's have this discussion, this debate on the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, and why it's there. And I think that allows us to get focused. We all know the stats. If you confiscate guns from law-abiding citizens, the only one who have guns will be the criminals. I mean, it just doesn't make much sense. And there are things that can be done. The one thing the president does real well in is bringing in cameras to these open meetings with reps and senators, and they're unfettered.
Demystifies them at the very least.
And they can say what they want. He gives them the time. No one would expect that. I've never seen this. I mean, my 20 years, I've never seen an open meeting, and that's what they are.
Right.
And the president responds, And then it's a matter of will we and how we move forward through the process.
John, people in particular have gone pretty hard on you about the NRA contributions that come to you. They've really gone after you about this. Well, and I think this started during the CNN town hall meeting when you've got this young student who says, Mark Rubio, will you tell me you'll never accept money from the NRA again? Which I first off think that's an interesting question. But, you know, the NRA contributes quite a lot to your campaign.
Well, look, associations have the right by the Constitution to collectively organize to air their grievances. Let's go back to founding principles. They also, political action committee dollars or individual dollars that go to an association that then the association apportions out to people who are supporters. I make no bones about it that I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment, and I'm proud to be supported by the National Rifle Association. So the they can complain all they want. You know, one out of four, one out of four people in my district have a Ford card. I think that tells you where.
My first thought is only one out of four.
There might be some ownership without registration.
I was getting ready to say that one out of four have Ford cards, but you know, about 90% of them have a gun.
So they can attack me. I've been here in this job long enough. I don't care about people attacking me for what. And the litmus test, the judgment will be in primaries and general elections, and we'll move forward.
Right, John. I received a note from one of our listeners. Her name was Mary. And she says, I've got the final figure. This year, I will make $2,200 more in my paycheck. I will take home more this year, $2,200 more this year. She was very happy to reach out and share that news with me this week.
Yeah, it's Democrats really overreached on demagoguing the tax relief. I heard a stat, and it'd be interesting to find Marion, because you got manufacturing here. 50% of all manufacturers in the country are planning to expand next year. Up in Rantoul, the AT&T call center just is going to hire 100 more people. They credit the tax reform bill. So you're seeing more jobs, you're seeing bonuses or increased wages, or their health care benefits are going to be better.
And some places are also generating more into their employees' pension plans.
Yeah, so I'm...
A man here contacted me, said his company was sharing stock in the company with him.
Yeah, and as a Republican, we believe in less government, individual responsibility, lower taxes, and more personal freedoms and liberties. That's what really the foundational principles of why I'm a Republican. Lowering taxes and simplifying the code is what we achieved in this tax relief bill, and I'm pretty proud of it. I mean, sometimes there's some big issues you just think you'll never do. It's just hard. This was a great victory, and a great victory for the working class of our society. And the other thing is, and you see it because you get it from the callers, we were in such a malaise the last 8 years. No hope, no opportunity.
Malaise being the more accurate word, but the popular vernacular was the new normal, that this is the way it's always going to be. Manufacturing is never going to come back to the United States. This is the best it's going to be. And that was a steady drumbeat. Don't expect more. Probably one of the most anti-American things ever. Telling people this is as good as it gets.
Yeah. And the big three are bringing back automobile employment. Into Detroit, big announcement just recently. So when people ask me, well, what have you done for for Southern Illinois, I said I passed a tax relief bill that brings more money back into the individual's pocketbook.
Right. Today, Goreville, and then later Metropolis. And you know what's interesting? When I was reading your press release issued overnight, it kind of caught my attention because I hate not knowing stuff. You know me well enough to know this. That you are going to be down there talking with senior Department of Energy officials, I guess. You've already questioned them about the department's uranium bartering program that has distorted the uranium markets and its effect on Honeywell.
Yeah, well, the nuclear industry across the country is in trouble. It's in trouble because of low-cost natural gas prices. It's in trouble because it's still relatively high-cost energy. and it's in trouble because of excessive regulations and costs, and it's in trouble because of the DOE bartering process, which allows them to use tailings in the fuel mix, which hurts the process of our production of fuel needed for nuclear power plants. And you hear of power plants being closed. So that means, you know, just basic supply and demand kicks in. So if you have less demand for a product, and you can, and the product you can use, and the Department of Energy is using other materials to subvert the product that you're producing, you are in trouble. And fortunately, the plant's only idled, but we have been pressing the DOE because part of their position is it should not hurt U.S. manufacturing.
And weren't those rules originally written in such a way?
Yes.
That explicitly covered that. Right. And if I remember correctly, John, and I hope you'll correct me if I am wrong, to the point in that legislation, to if it affects more than X percentage, you cannot do this.
Correct. And this is a DOE's been using this to pay for reclamation and recovery, so they've been using it as a revenue stream while we're idling our Honeywell plant in Metropolis, and we're going to keep ramping up the pressure.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, until you and I were talking, sometimes it's easy to forget that you've been in, you know, energy since, like, you got to D.C., basically.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. I know a little bit, and I guess the more you know, the more you realize what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so you just keep
deeper
and deeper.
The more you don't know, yeah.
You keep deeper in the pit. So I'm, in essence, legislatively a subject matter expert, but if I was in that sector, like the nuclear industry sector, I'd be a neophyte. So.
Right. You know, it's interesting because, you know, when we talk about this, because the United States does not have a clear energy policy, and we have not for some time. We have seen some dramatic changes. I mean, you and I, in the time that you and I have known each other, look, we're talking about the greatest oil production in the United States since the 70s, and we have literally delivered our first it was a light crude oil to the United Arab Emirates out of Texas. You've got people in the Middle East who now want to buy oil concerns in this country to be on the energy sector. Things have changed. Is it time we have something new when it comes to energy policy in this country?
Well,
something wholesale, a plan.
The answer is, I mean, we have been talking all the above for a long time. And so how did that, the market, it gets very complicated because Illinois is a competitive market state. Missouri is still a regulated state. That's why Missouri can, in essence, protect, I would say, their coal-burning power plants because the cost can be passed on through the ratepayers through a regulatory process, where Illinois, it's just competitive. Our manufacturers like Illinois being a competitive state because they get low-cost energy, but there is struggles because of that. And so we don't have, and I don't think we're ever going to now. I just think the competitive aspect is going to be this mix of regulated and deregulated states, and there's going to be winners and losers. And the losers are going to be sometimes our next door neighbors who are in the coal mine fields and are in these.
And the people in your district.
And these aged power plants that cannot do the capital investments to meet with current emission standards. I mean, the best one we have right now is Prairie State up in Washington County, and it has a mine right across the road. It's awesome, but it's still at risk because of the regulatory regime.
EPA and overreach.
I mean, this administration has stopped the war on coal.
A lot of deregulatory efforts there, yeah, that maybe people are unaware of.
Oh, I mean, it's the industry is really breathing a sigh of relief, but there are still the pricing challenges are still there, especially in a competitive state.
It's interesting. I'm at Kroger. I'm shopping, and a guy pulls me off site. Says, "You know, I heard you guys talking the other day on the air." He says, "Think about this for a minute. Coal from Illinois plants goes into the electric power plant. The electricity goes to Honeywell, and Honeywell makes uranium rods to power nuclear power plants around the world in Metropolis. Illinois coal powers the world."
Yeah.
perspective's an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
You know, John, we live in a very volatile time. We see the violence in our schools. We see a political tone, which some people would say is unprecedented. Historically, you look since the beginning of this country, no, we've always said some pretty bad things about political candidates. But there is a new, and social media has brought it to a new, is it safe to say dangerous pitch, John? Well, when I'm thinking of, you know, baseball teams being shot at in Washington.
Well, I think about this quite a bit, especially over the past year. And I think culturally we're sick. I think we've lost our moral foundation. I think there's evil in the world. And left unchecked by any belief, I'm a Christian, but it could be any other moral belief in how to respond individually, then you're left to the sinful views and the lust and the desires of evil. And, you know, the Bible says, love God and then love your neighbor as yourself. Doesn't say love God and then call your neighbor names or threaten them and throw things at him and put the worst construction on him. Martin Luther says, put the best construction on everything. Put the best goals and desires. And social media, I'm on it. You have to be on it. But the anonymous aspects, some of our papers do it. They do the sound off, and then they don't put who it is. It's a phone call thing. It's wrong.
It's propaganda, John.
It's propaganda. So I'm very much concerned, and I would hope that
the blatant manipulation of the American people by large sections of the media with the untruth. Yeah. When I say untruth, I mention that intentionally so that we evoke an Orwellian sense about this, because I think George Orwell underestimated us. Yeah.
I would just hope that people would look to the better angels of themselves. And get to a point. We do it on the floor all the time.
See, and what's weird, John, here's my facetious little gene popping up. You know, expect the best and wear body armor.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to live in that world.
I think people, if they would look at Washington and the media says, well, we're at each other's throats all the time, it's just not true. We are friends. We operate every day in agreeing to disagree. Our allies today could be our political enemies tomorrow, and they could be our allies next day. You know, I'm moving a couple pieces of legislation, and the way I can do it is through a bipartisan agreement.
Because CNN I can't would never get, say that. No, you never hear that.
I can't get this stuff moved because I'll have some.
They
people
would have us believe, John, that only Republicans vote for legislation that Republicans haven't done, and never the twain shall meet.
Well, again, you follow my Tosca bill that the President Obama signed, and we just had a 2-year budget agreement, which we didn't totally like, but we don't like government shutdowns, so now we're just going to do our
what you're talking bills. About is driving that doggone deficit up, aren't you?
Well, yeah, $300 billion more, but it's hard for us when we do $1.5 trillion in a tax relief package that we think is going to get a return of over that. We think that's going to get covered, and it really goes down again to the mandatory
spending.
But
you know what? You have a track record on increased tax revenues from growth during the Bush administration. There was a very clear response there when things were loosened up. And so what you're doing is saying, well, it worked before. Let's try it again.
Well, when capital gains were reduced, more revenue came into the federal treasury. And, I mean, just listen to the folks that you talked to and the comment you made. What's that money going to go to? Whether it's going to go to their own savings accounts, whether it's going to go to go out to the movie theater and go out to dinner. We're pretty excited about it. You know, the great thing about it is the private sector doing this. It's not government saying we're gonna increase a minimum wage to inspire this to grow. We're going to excite private sector so that they're going to reward, and we want the private sector to fight for these jobs. And when they need more people to work in these jobs, they're going to have to pay higher wages instead of a centralized control. Well, we're going to make everybody equal, and we're going to dictate this wage set.
Right. And there's an old song about we will keep all trees equal by hatchet, axe, and saw. That's right. Congressman John Shimkus, who's put in with me quoting Rush lyrics this morning. I really appreciate it, John.
That's great.
Goreville today, 11, 11:30.
You got me pretty close to that time.
I think it's 11:30. Right. You're going to be in Gorville today.
Yes.
Although I'm a little unfamiliar with what the new fiber optic installation of Peninsula Media constitutes, and I'm looking forward to you telling me next time you and I get together.
Okay, very good. I'll plan to do that.
All right, Congressman John Shimkus, always, John, it's a privilege.